Welcome to Survive in Society. We are joined in the studio today with Joe Appiah, Kim Johnson MP, Gloria Morrison from Jengba, Jengba being Joint Enterprise Not Guilty by Association campaigner and campaign group. We're going to start this episode with Joe. It is such an honour to have you in the studio. So Joe is a survivor and was a victim of a miscarriage of justice by way of Joint Enterprise. We spoke about Joint Enterprise a lot on the show, and this is the first time that we have someone on the show who served a prison sentence for Joint Enterprise. And before we get into the current matters relating to Joint Enterprise and how we are going to abolish it, it's really important for us to start with Joe and Joe's story.
This goes back to an incident that took place back in 2010. It was just a normal day. I was finishing school. I got a text from one of my friends. He was telling me to ring him. So when I rang him, he just told me like he'd been confronted by like two boys at his school. So two of my friends, they went to that school, but those other boys, they just came out of nowhere, like in their own clothes. They weren't even in uniform or anything, but they were older where they wouldn't be in school uniform. They'll be like in college. But long story short, it was like a verbal confrontation. But the older boys were kind of like, how can I say, like trying to get a reaction trying to like embarrass and belittle them in front of everyone. This happened in front of like all the teachers, school kids, girls. Everyone was just watching and like everyone's a bit scared. They've told me what's happened over the phone, so I've left my school and I've gone straight to my area where they basically said we will go meet up. I was 15, one of my friends was 15, other friend was 16. We got on a bus to go to the other area to like confront these boys, but as we were heading towards that area, a few more people were like called to like, do you want to come? And then like 15-year-old, another 13-year-old, another 15-year-old. And we went on the bus and we went all the way to their area. And when we got to their area, we weren't really sure like what we would do or where we will go, who we would even see, because it's not like we told them we're coming. We just came. Do you get what I'm saying? It was more of like my friend wanted to go because he felt that they hurt his ego. And we just went along with him on a bus. We used the Oyster card, so we were all like, identified. Do you know what I'm saying? We didn't really realise what we was going on, just adventure. But anyway, we've got to the area and then basically like some of the boys that we were with now were a bit older. I'd say about 16 years old. Altogether, there was about seven of us now. It started off as three, then it was like seven. And when we've got to this like park, everyone started running from my group towards like up this road, and at the top of the road there was like a massive park, and like there's like gates we'd have to climb over to get in. But in that park there was like there's like 18 people in the park, and I remember thinking like, see, I'm running with the group now, I remember thinking, wow, there's a lot of people in that park. I wasn't really sure whether to like get involved, but some of my friends had already jumped over, they already started running into the park, so I just climbed in and I've started running as well. What I realised is as all my friends are running into the park, that large group that we could see had started like leaving the park. They would have started running off different directions. Some were on bikes. They seemed to like be running because obviously our groups like entered their park. But as they were running, there were like objects being like thrown. I couldn't see what they were at the time, but as we were like getting closer towards the exit, we could see these objects on the floor were like knives. And like, I wasn't really sure why they were throwing knives, like, but it kind of made me feel like, oh, like, it's gone a bit much now, isn't it? Like, there's knives, like, do you know what I'm saying? And at this point, I'm still in my school uniform because as I've got the phone call from school, I've literally just come straight to my area in my own clothes or anything. I'm in a tie, blazer, school shoes. Yeah. A few of the boys I'm with, I'm actually like in their school uniform as well, because they literally just came from school, didn't go home, and just thought, okay, let's just go on this venture. This group now, this large group, they've ran off, they've left. And like, that was a moment of relief for me, because I felt like they had knives, but they've left. So it just meant like, even though we came here to like be tough or whatever, we don't really have to like face any sort of violence anymore. Yeah. They've left. Like, we were kind of satisfied that like it boosted our egos a bit. Like, yeah, we chased them off, cool. So I'd say we were like stood there, adrenaline pumping. We're still young. We saw knives. We didn't really leave straight away. We were kind of like all like a bit just like geared up, like just a bit. I don't know how to explain. Like, the adrenaline had us all a bit amped, if I'd say. About 5-6 minutes of just standing around talking about it, we were kind of leaving. But where the park's quite massive, as we're leaving, it still takes about 5 minutes to actually leave the park. And as we're walking, I remember hearing like a shout from behind us. And that group there, where I said there was like 18 of them, I say about half came back. Half of them came back, they returned, but this time they were like proper tooled up. Like the main guy had a sword. Other ones had like longer weapons like bats. I could see knives like out from the other group. I was just thinking, oh my God, they've come back. It kind of changed the whole dynamic again.
Yeah.
Some people from my group, one guy wanted to like leave. I could see he wanted to leave, but it's like a peer pressure kind of thing. Like you can't just leave now. You can't leave when it suits you. Like we've all kind of coming together kind of thing. I did think about leaving, but at the same time, it was more like I just couldn't leave. I didn't really want to be like targeted after this, because what happens is if you leave, or if you kind of like, if you do anything that kind of interferes with it, you're kind of like an enemy to your own. So for me, I'm not gonna lie, like I just kind of had to like bury my fear and just kind of stand ground with these guys. When these guys have come back now, remember I told you previously there were like knives being thrown. I remember one was like more towards the right side of the park, so I remember I jogged over and I picked up one of the knives and I came back to my group, and like me holding that knife, I just felt a lot more safer, a lot more I felt a lot more protected. I just felt like they've got swords. If I'm gonna still stand here and still act like I'm not scared, I need to at least feel a bit more protected. So I had the knife. After about, so these guys have come back. There was a lot of like, no one was really trying to make the first move. People were scared from both sides, as you can imagine. And this is all happening in broad daylight, by the way. So in the middle of the park, this is all going off, but there's like tower blocks. People are looking out their windows. There's a high street, the high street we initially ran up to get into the park from. All the shops, all the people in barber shops, they've all come out. Everyone's just watching like it's a football match. And it's just such an obvious, crazy event in broad daylight. And I was just thinking, this is insane. But eventually one guy from my group kind of like gained a bit of courage, and he just like started running towards that group again. And as that group's running, I didn't know at the time, but the victim on my actual case, he was part of that group. He ran like kind of towards our group, you know, almost like a head-on collision. Halfway through running, I'd say he kind of realized his group was running away. So he tried to like turn different direction. As that guy that I told you from my group started running towards that group, we all started running as a group towards that group. So I even saw the victim kind of run past. I wasn't really trying to do anything to anyone, if that makes sense. I just realized in these situations, you kind of have to bluff it out. If you show fear, you can end up losing your life, if that makes sense. Yeah. So it was more like a just trying to like scare them away kind of thing. But the second time they ran off, once again, they ran off. Like they were too far away for any of us to really like get close to them, but they ran off. The boy that initially ran the other way, you know, the victim of my case, when he's ran off, he's ran through the park and he's kind of left the park. But I found all this out later on in trial when all the CCTV came out. Me and my friend were still doing that chase where we chased that group out, and I came out of the park and a woman in like a third floor of a flat, she was like doing a live phone call to the police, and she was like telling the police every little detail as it was happening, as everything's literally unfolding. And with her CCTV, we retrieved it, and it basically was describing me in her road, like right outside of her house, if she was looking down from the third floor. And the reason she could describe me so well is because I was like the only mixed race person there. The clothes I was wearing, my school uniform, she described me. And on the live phone call, literally 5 seconds later, she was saying they just chased the boy out the end of the park. And obviously this park is 200 meters long. So where she's literally just placed me there, saying that there's all people in the park, she placed me there, and within 5 seconds, a boy has been chased out at the end. And obviously that was the final chase where that boy that I told you had been running towards us, he ran away.
So you're going the opposite direction.
So I'm going the opposite direction. So he literally ran out the park. But as he's been ran out the park, three people from my group had kind of noticed him. So they started like detouring and they kind of chased him in his in that direction. And from like I said again, from CCTV that all came out during trial, I later saw that those three boys, literally they chased him into the road. And the boy at the front, he had a knife on him and he stabbed the victim like once in his back. But he'd hit him so hard, like, and he's like, it was like below his left shoulder, it cut a pulmonary vein, and like that caused the boy to like bleed out like within like the next hour. Even when the boy ran after being stabbed, he ran across the road, ran into a chicken shop, he closed the door on himself, and he like tried to use it as a barricade. He like used his weight. Another one of the boys in that group of three, he ran and he like fly kicked the door, like trying to get the door open, try to get him again. As that has all happened, the guy that's done the stabbing, he's like run off down that long road, because this is the long road that we ran up eventually at the start of the story. And now they've run down. The second guy that was with him that done the kick to the door, he's run down. The third guy that was in that group of three that chased that victim, he's left now. Remember when the woman's placed me outside the house? As I've come back into the park with my other friend that was with me, I slowly started seeing like our group had got a lot smaller. I couldn't really see like our group because we were all stood next to each other for how long. So when you realise everyone's kind of scattered in different places, I was looking around and I could see some people had left because the numbers had gotten smaller. Some people were like more towards the other end of the park where they were leaving. Some people were like in the middle. But all in all, I could see everyone was slowly just kind of leaving because everyone was going in one direction to going back out of the park. And me and my other friend, we were still like this end. So we started to like leave as well. We started to like run towards everyone, but everyone's like already left. Bear in mind, I don't know who saw the stabbing, but anyone like near the actual stabbing left immediately. Like, do you get what I'm saying?
You weren't there. You were not there.
No,
you
so
were
that's
on
what
the
I'm,
other side.
Yeah,
of the park.
That's what I'm. So everything I'm saying there. Now is like because I found out later on in trial through like stills. I couldn't. So I never saw it at the time when it actually happened. So that's what really kind of blows my mind because everyone
being
ran
in
off.
Prison for something.
Yeah,
you
like
were not,
yeah,
you
that's,
were not
yeah.
there.
Even when I talk about it, sometimes I just think like it still sounds so crazy. Like people wouldn't really believe how it happened. Do you get what I'm saying? Like, but all these, yeah, so like literally the boy's been stabbed. When we've all left the park, we've all gone separate directions. But I ended up getting on a bus that came towards me and my other friend that left. We left separately, like two of us. We got on a bus. The bus was packed. But those boys that were with us that went to the park as well, they were on that bus, but they got on at the first stop, like the bus station.
Yeah.
So by the time that bus had got to us, it was just packed because all the people waited at the bus station. They were sat at the back of the bus. Me and my friend were at the front because obviously later on in the trial, they said there was conversations about the stabbing, but we wasn't there when it happened because we were at the front of the bus or the packed bus.
So that's more just so that's people here. People are going to be hearing those conversations about the stabbing on the bus.
Yeah, on the bus, yeah. So when we've got off the bus at my area now, that's when one of the boys said someone had been like, he didn't actually use the word stabbed. He said someone had been touched and like with like street, however you call that slang, touch basically means like harmed, but it could mean anything. Like it could mean someone got like punched
or.
Yeah,
it's not necessary.
Yeah, it wasn't literally like this person been stabbed. But in that sort of culture, people don't really, you don't really say those, you don't really, it's not a thing you just like to really tell people like, oh yeah, this person stabbed this or shot this person. And then basically, I remember going home, it was like a mad experience. Like I went home and I remember like a few hours later, one of my friends, he rang me and he told me to put the news on because he said that boy died. But when he was saying that boy died, I didn't know what boy he meant because I didn't see anyone get stabbed. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And where everyone was running in different directions, everyone disappeared at one point out of my vision. Everyone like was in a different place at any point. So when he said that boy died, and I remember when I've gone on the news and I saw the boy's face and they said he'd been murdered today, I was like, oh my God, that's the guy. Because that was the guy that I saw in the, that ran off in a different direction. Yeah. But I never really heard about him again, if that makes sense. Like after he'd ran off and I was running a different direction, no one ever really mentioned the boy again. And that's where I kind of like missed out on like overhearing what happened, because when I got on the bus, I was at the front of the bus, so I didn't know until that phone call happened. And the craziest thing about this whole situation is even when I saw that this was on the news, this was now like a serious matter, I was quite scared in the fact that obviously I'd been there, but I felt like I didn't do the killing, because I didn't do the stabbing, I just felt like it's mad that I was there. I knew like maybe I might get in trouble for being there, but I never thought I would go to jail for the killing, if that makes sense. Yeah, I never believed that. Yeah.
Joe, I just want to say thank you so much for sharing your story. But I just want to say I'm so sorry that this society has created a scenario where you would be imprisoned for something that you didn't do. And I'm so sorry about the racialized, the classed, the place-based politics that lead up to that moment and everything that came after. I know my apology is just nothing like compared to what you've been through, but as you're speaking, all I can think about is how much inequality produces what you went through. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. How long were you in prison for?
So in the end, I ended up serving 12 years, and that was a tariff that I was handed down during trial. Yeah.
Joe, you're incredible. You're incredible.
Mm-hmm.
And you telling your story now in this way, like the work you're doing now, like, I'm sorry that your path has meant that you had to go through what you've been through in this way. You're incredible.
Thank you.
So, where we find ourselves today?
Well, you know, we've been campaigning now for nearly 13 years. You know, I feel the trauma's still in Joe's voice, and he, you know, he's got to be careful because he has to relive that trauma the time he tells his story. The boy that did the kick, did he get murder?
No, he got manslaughter. Yeah.
So he's part of the chasing group.
I know.
He's actually tried to...
The reason he got manslaughter...
He got murder. You get murder?
Yeah, the reason he got manslaughter is because in trial he had a psychologist come in, say he had a overall brain age of 12. Some of the exercises he was doing were hitting a 10-year-old's. That's yeah. So at the time, the defence, we wasn't sure if it would work.
You didn't have this... You didn't... Yeah, you didn't have the support, like, it's just, yeah.
But what I'd like to raise, I mean, is why as a society do we lock up children? I've been saying it for years. It doesn't make sense that we have these secure schools, that we have these secure units, that we have these YOIs that are costing millions and millions of pounds every year to run just to lock up children. And it is the, you know, that we I don't know if we spoke to you since we had the CPS scrutiny panel where we insisted that they actually... recorded ethnicity because they don't record ethnicity on charging decisions, and the report came out in September, and it was shocking even for me, for someone who's been campaigning about this for years. It was the most. It's you're 16 times more likely if you're a black child, boys mainly, to be convicted than your white counterpart. I mean, that's just a horrendous and indicative of what joint enterprise is about. You know, it's a racist doctrine. It's Russian roulette. We've been saying, you know, you're up to the mercy of the courts, of the judge. We're doing a lot of family listening days around the country, and a lot of the families feel that, you know, this is the fault of the judges, that they are directing juries to find innocent people guilty of murder when they haven't actually murdered anyone, like Joe, who's 200 yards away. He hasn't murdered anybody, but because he's part of a group of, let's face it, silly boys, idiots. They're you know, that's an interesting concept, that what do you do when you're in that situation? Because you don't want to leave your friends, and you know what you're doing is potentially dangerous, but, you know, I won't tell young people to be careful.
I just want to retract that. I don't think we should call them silly boys. I think these are people that are part of a society that has been constructed in a particular way, which leads us to express our egos, our masculinity, our gender, our race, our ethnicity in particular ways that are...
I agree. I mean,
they're embedded in inequality. I know you didn't mean it like that, Gloria. I just think it's important that we say, like, there are other parts of society which expresses itself in other ways that are not criminalised or locked up.
Yeah. The thing with joint enterprise is that we've said it's a blunt instrument, and it can be used on anyone, any men, women, children, and it needs to go. So where we're at now is that we're trying to, with Kim's help, pass a private members bill to get rid of the idea that you can be associated with someone who carries out a crime and you can go to prison for longer, sometimes longer than the person's actually done the crime, because they'll plead guilty, you'll plead not guilty because you haven't done it, and they'll get a lesser sentence for their guilty plea. So with Kim's bill, I'll hand over to Kim.
Yeah, please do, Kim.
Chantal, thank you. And I wanted to just start by thanking Joe for sharing that very powerful story, you know, and talk about the impact it had on his life, but also to Gloria and the other campaigners from Jengva, because I wouldn't be here talking about my private members bill if it wasn't for the campaign group. You know, Joe and Gloria have spoken very eloquently in terms of people being locked up for wrongful convictions. You know, it is a massive miscarriage of justice. So my bill had a second reading on Friday the 2nd of February. And while we knew from the beginning that it wasn't something that the government were likely to support, you know, we did have and have got, you know, cross-party support, you know, and a recognition that joint enterprise does need to be revised because it is used as a dragnet and it is used to take primarily black boys off the street. Last week, we became aware that at the Old Bailey, on one day alone, there were 7 joint enterprise trials going on, with on average 5 per trial. You know, Gloria mentioned the CPS pilot survey that took place last year and reported in September. And they identified 1,088 cases per year in terms of joint enterprise. And it's not only the social impact of joint enterprise on those young people, young black men, but also the financial burden it has on taxpayers. You know, $250 million it costs to prosecute those 1,088.
That's how to get them, Kim. Yeah. Tell them. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And in terms of the incarceration, we're talking about $1.2 billion per year to incarcerate. But that's on average, because we know to incarcerate young people and women, it costs more. And we know, as Gloria's pointed out, that joint enterprise, sadly, imprisons lots more children, and it shouldn't be happening. Children should not be incarcerated. You know, people were up in arms after they watched the Mr. Bates vs. the Post Office drama that was on in January because of the wrongful convictions of those people going to prison for doing nothing. You know, and people, you know, rightly so, were aggrieved in terms of you expect the system in our country to work and to work equally for everybody. And we all know, you know, that that's not the case. And some stupid MP at my debate on Friday, Philip Davies MP, questioned, you know, whether the CPS was institutionally racist. And as Gloria will attest, your people in the gallery screamed yes, and I did shout yes, they are, because you know we know from the survey they conducted that black boys are 16 times more likely to be prosecuted under joint enterprise. But we already know that the criminal justice system is institutionally racist. You know, the 2017 LAMI review identified that. You know, we know that more black boys get stopped and searched, you know, so it's endemic, you know, and that's what we're contending with at the moment. But I am optimistic that things will change, because the campaign has raised the profile, it's raised awareness of joint enterprise. We have cross-party support. We had Rob Butler, Tory MP, you know, saying that he recognised that there were problems with joint enterprise, and our front bench, the Labour Party, are committed to changing joint enterprise in power. You know, David Lammy gave assurances to the campaign group, and as the DPP, Keir Starmer, said that they've gone as far as they can to in the court. It's now down to Parliament. And so we will hold everybody to account to look at making those changes, because this can't continue, because we have a prison system that is, you know, cracking under the pressure of the amount of people that are being incarcerated incorrectly and wrongfully. It is a massive miscarriage of justice, and it's a massive miscarriage of justice that needs to be righted and as soon as possible. You know, the lives of these young people have been damaged. You know, they can't, you know, getting access to employment, having access to facilities while in prison. You know, because if you're sent down for murder, the opportunities to do certain things are not available, and it's a mark on the rest of your life if you're identified as a murderer. Then that's it. Even though thousands, and I'm talking about thousands because, you know, the pilot survey identified 1,000 per year. So, you know, during the life of this horrendous, you know, doctrine, how many have been incarcerated? You know, Jengba work with so many families, but I would imagine to tip of the iceberg, because sadly, you know, the CPS do not flag joint enterprise cases. You know, and they do not identify equality monitoring, you know, and again, it's a way of hiding behind stuff. Mm. You know, the fact that disproportionately higher numbers are incarcerated, and it is wrong and it does need to change. But, you know, on Friday, I call for the debate to be adjourned. So the bill will stay on the order paper for the duration time. So we're continuing to campaign. You know, I've written to the DPP to request a meeting. When we met with the minister last week, it was suggested that the CPS, DPP and Felicity Gerry, Casey, who's provided lots of support, you know, she was responsible for the 2016 Supreme Court case, you know, so... Yeah. So that there are things that will be moving forward, you know, in terms of the campaign and in terms of the fight to tighten up. Because we're not saying that joint enterprise shouldn't exist. What we're saying is that joint enterprise needs to be delivered in line with the law. You know, we know that only last week those two young people who were committed for the murder of Brianna Gee, you know, were prosecuted under joint enterprise, and there have been other cases where it has been rightly used, but we're looking at the wrongful convictions and the miscarriages of justice.
As I thank you so much for that explanation, Kim. I mean, as a critical sociologist here, kind of thinking a little bit about the last bit that you said there, Kim, I want to just flesh out what it is about reviving joint enterprise rather than abolishing joint enterprise. What are the reasons why we wouldn't just call for an abolition of it?
Because there have been some notable cases where joint enterprise has been used, rightly so. If it wasn't for joint enterprise, those people who were responsible for the murder of Stephen Lawrence, you know, would not have been convicted. So there are aspects of joint enterprise that work well, but the ones where don't, because the critical part of my bill is about significant contribution, and as Joe pointed out, he had no, you know, contribution to that whatsoever, and like lots of other cases where there's been no significant contribution. You know, Felicity has provided examples where people were cycling to and from a place that they got convicted. A woman went back to look for her shoes after an affray. She was convicted. So there's so many examples of where it's been wrongfully used.
So if there's more, if there's an overwhelming amount of examples of it being wrongfully used rather than it being rightfully used, I'm just struggling to see why it wouldn't be better to be calling for an abolition. Mm-hmm. And I get, but what I'm thinking is the method that you're calling for one about trying to reduce harm. Do you see what I mean? So reduce as much harm as possible. Well, because if there's so many cases, thousands and thousands of cases where it's being employed in a way that is clearly a miscarriage of justice, why would we keep it for the minority?
Well, I think, you know, a lot of that is down to the CPS and the judges in terms of, you know, their poor direction of the jury.
I think that
they are some of the issues in terms of, because the 2016 Jogi case, was identified. You know, what they said at the time was, you know, the law had taken a wrong turn for 30 years. And it is very much about making sure that it is delivered in line with the law.
Yeah.
And reducing those wrongful convictions.
Brianna's murder, like those two teenagers, why can't they be convicted as individuals? Mm-hmm. Like, why does it have to be joint enterprise?
Because the two of them, and because there was no certainty in terms of the responsibility in those cases, because, you know, I think the courts identified they were both complicit.
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, planning and the carrying out of the acts as well.
But can I just intervene there? You actually don't need joint enterprise at all.
No, this is my thing. Here. Yeah.
Like, because we, on the scrutiny panel the other day, we were looking at cases that involve gangs, because they're always like, Joe, test this, you know, it's always the gang, the language of the gang. But they don't need it. So they showed us a case which did involve four individuals going into a house. Each had guns, every four of them had guns and knives, and they kill three people. Now that doesn't need a joint enterprise for that. That is a serious crime organisation that carried out, you know, that would be easily, and we said that to them, you didn't need to use joint enterprise here. And the thing with the CPS is I've been asking for nearly anyone who can tell me, when did joint enterprise start being used on murders? We know Derek Bentley was hung under joint enterprise, so that's 58. But then after that, we don't have a problem with the bank robber scenario. If you've got four guys going into a bank and the getaway driver knows they've got guns and someone might get harmed and seriously injured, we don't have a problem with that. That's joint enterprise. But when did they start using it on murders so that you can just say, well, he must have known what his friend was going to do. Joe must have known what his mate might do, or somebody he didn't even know might do. You know, it doesn't make any sense. It's totally illogical. But it's an instrument of the state to get all these massive of convictions, to put people in prison for life. Joe's still on life licence. That's the other thing.
You don't come out. It's racing class
war. You don't come out. And, you know, and the recall is something that prisoners who are ex-prisoners who are innocent, that didn't actually do the crime in the first place, are walking on eggshells.
Yeah.
Because if they get into a row, or if they get into an altercation kicks off, they will be recalled. So it's a massive national disgrace that joint enterprise is still being allowed to be used. I mean, they use it in Australia, and it's mainly Aboriginal boys. They use it in South Africa still. They use it in the West Indies. And it's just not good law. It's bad law, and it's locking up too many innocent people.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think what the people need to know as well with joint enterprise, the reason it's like so harsh is it's used quite a lot on children, like people under the age of 18, and these are all minors. And like, even me, when I was arrested, I was 15, because I was like so young, I couldn't even have a police interview without appropriate adult, so my dad had to come. So that's when I realized, like, I'm actually still a child, like, but it happened, like, I had a friend, I was telling Gloria, I had a friend, he got given 14 years for a joint enterprise murder when he was 13. And, like, life has never been the same for him. He's out now, he's about 30. It's not easy, do you know what I mean? And you can imagine, like, getting longer than you've lived. How would someone be normal after serving that time? You know, how do you catch up? How do you reintegrate back into society? How do you even act your age? Because it's like your life's on pause when you're in that place, and like, you're not really experiencing real life situations to like make you grow or mature in life. Like, it's literally just like a boarding school.
Well, and also, Joe, can you remember like the court experience? I mean, how are children understanding custody, excess or liability, or even joint enterprise? What does that mean?
Yeah.
And children have a really innate sense of justice. They can't have, well, I didn't do it. So what are you talking about, a joint enterprise? I had the same intention as someone I barely knew.
You know,
they're not understanding the legal processes. And often children are tried in adult court as well. So
I would Bailey.
Yeah.
Were you tried in
that? I would Bailey, yeah.
Oh, Joe. So much for listeners to take away from this episode. And I'm so grateful for all of you. Like, I think that in social justice work, like, what's just so incredible but present even in this room is how many different versions of pushing this requires, like what Kim's doing, what Joe's doing, what Gloria's doing. Like, it's so many routes to getting the outcome, and I'm just so grateful that
It is very, very depressing. It is very. But the one thing when our families come together and we give each other strength, we call ourselves a family.
Yeah.
Everybody's going through very, very similar experiences. Yeah. And it's just, you know, we know from, like, there was a mum who came to Kim's reading of the bill the other day. Her son's, I think he's 19, he's got a 34-year sentence. You know, like, these sentences have gone through the roof. When my son went to prison, he got a 16, and that was, like, terrible. But now we're seeing the average sentence about 24. So we've just got such a society that believes in punitive cruelty, you know, in every aspect of it. If you, you know, the great philosophers say, look at your prisons and you'll see your society.
Yeah,
and that's
exactly
what we've got. We've got prisons that are full of mentally ill people. The IPP stain is mainly because, you know, someone stole a bike and they're still doing prison service at time after 17 years.
Mm.
It's just, and we don't look at it. We don't, we look away. We don't think, well, that can happen to me. We don't think it can happen to you. And one of the things when I first started this campaign, I didn't know many people who'd been to prison. And now, just so many people I know have known people who've been to families that have experienced prisons, you know, fathers and then their sons. And now we've got a good friend of mine, Mikey, his son, they just got his son a couple of months ago and he's got a 24. And Mikey's doing a 32. You know, they do go after families.
Mm.
Well, the expectation, isn't it, that, you know, we have the greatest system in the world, you know, but it's not operating fairly because people believe, like Joe was saying, well, I'm okay, I didn't do wrong. You know, and so many young people, you know, have that opinion, I didn't do anything, you know, I shouldn't be sent down. And, and it's dealing with that psychological impact of those sentences. You know, there was a young girl killed in my constituency a couple of years ago. She was 12 years old. She was killed by a 14-year-old. He stabbed her in the neck. He got 13 years for inflicting that, for killing that girl. You know, he gets less than, you know, these young people who are being convicted under joint enterprise. It's, you know, the system is wrong.
If you wanted the listeners to take away anything from this episode, what would it be?
I just want people to, like, be aware that there's, like, an injustice out there called joint enterprise. Like, I believe eventually we will get there. Jengbar, all the other, like, charities, organisations involved, even like MPs, lawyers, everyone involved. I believe we'll get there. We'll get justice one day. But I'd just like everyone to know, like, this is a flaw in our system, basically. Like, you know, we're from, this isn't a third world country. Like, England is a very, like, we're up there, innit? England is meant to be a country that's, like, looked at as, like, one of the greatest in the world. So in a country like this, how do we still have things like this happening to young kids in this day and age? And especially when it's, like, targeting young black people, especially, like, aren't we in a day and age where we live in a fair and diverse, equal society?
Thank you so much for that, Joan. Thank you so much, Gloria, Kim, Joe. It's incredible.
Thank you for listening to Surviving Society.
To support our work, you can rate,
review and subscribe.
To host or produce a series of Surviving Society,
get in touch with us via Twitter or Instagram.